Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey, everybody, welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne. I am continuing my series on diversity in the workplace. Had a great show a couple of days ago with Torin Ellis of the Torin Ellis brand, and we discussed racial bias. And it was an interesting show. I was able to ask some questions that I've been scared to answer before because of sensitivity issues, and I want to make sure that the person that I'm speaking with knows that I come from a sincere place. And with that, we're going to continue this series. Today we'll be talking about ageism, and I want to thank Will Thompson out there in Austin, who introduced me to Mark Miller. Mark is the founder of Career Pivot, and he calls himself a career design specialist. When I had an opportunity to speak with him briefly, I confess that I have about 15 careers myself. When I look back over my life, I started working when I was only 12, and I took in ironing, and I made doll clothes for a lady that lived down the street from me that made porcelain dolls. So I am a workaholic, have been since I was 12 years old. And so I love this topic, especially given that I am a single woman, very close to my 52nd birthday. So with that, I want to introduce my guest this morning. Mark, thank you for joining me here on HR Latte.
Thank you, Ryan. And by the way, you're still a kid. 52 is young. Well,
oh, good, good. I'm glad you said that. I still feel like a kid. Every morning when my back stops creaking, I think, wow, I feel 18. I think my brain thinks I'm 18 still, but that's okay. Well, I can handle the fact that I'm 52. I talk about being in my 50s, and I actually love it. So the one thing, though, that has me concerned, Mark, is in this world when youth is as idolized, when we have Botox at every corner and hair dyes take up a whole aisle at the grocery store, at the Target, how can we, and we'll get into this deeper, but how can we maintain a positive attitude about our age when it seems like youth is the most important thing, in particular when it comes to being hired? I'm going to save that question for later, but if you could give us a brief introduction of yourself, I'd love that.
Sure. I refer to myself as a recovering engineer, and I'm a serial career changer. I'm at my 15th career. I'm on my 7th career. I started my early career first 22 years at IBM. Been through 2 successful startups. Nearly killed myself a dozen years ago on a bicycle. Hit a car head on at 50 miles an hour, and lived. And wow. After that, I taught high school math. I did a year of fundraising for a nonprofit here in Austin, got sucked up into another startup. So I've been around the block a few times. And I started my business career pivot about 4 years ago because I saw many of our generation, by the way, I turned 60 here soon,
yay!
who are not, who will never be able to retire. They don't still have the money. And more importantly, most of us don't want to retire. And so I started Career Pivot based around the fact that I didn't see anybody addressing the issues of the baby boomer generation. We're not the AARP generation.
Right, we're not. And actually, I rejected the cards when they came in the mail. I don't want these. I'll take a AAA card any day of the week, but not an AARP card. So, well, I appreciate you being here with me this morning to talk about this issue, which some people might find sensitive to talk about, especially given the day and age that we live in when everybody, not everybody, but most people are expected to know a great deal about today's technology, whether it's social technology or standard technology on a computer that we sit down at our daily life, at our office. I like to consider myself, and this is a term that I coined a couple of years ago when we started talking about the next-gen workforce. I coined this term now-gen. The now-gen is anybody who came to the workforce during a time of dictaphones and fax machines and embraced new technology as it came along and didn't say, I don't need anything new. There are many people today that are retiring that said, I don't need to learn anything new. I have my career set. I have my retirement in place. But for me, I have thrived throughout my life on continual learning. And so when I consider where my life would be right now if I hadn't taken a deep dive into social media about 10 years ago, I don't know what I would be doing. I might still be a dental assistant somewhere in Indiana. I don't know. But I consider myself the now gen. This is a generation of people who have in their past a great deal of work experience, professional experience, have a strong work ethic, and decided that they want to learn new things and want to stay a part of the workforce generation of today. And that means working side by side with maybe some millennials and teaching each other a few things. We come to this place in our life with a great deal of wisdom gained, right? We come with a great deal of wisdom gained, and I don't think that the average 18-year-old has that wisdom, and I think there's still a great deal that we can offer to the world of work. And so let's talk about why you created Career Pivot, and then let's get right into our issue of ageism.
Okay. The reason I created was, as I said, I was watching most of my friends being financially wiped out in the last two recessions, and they were going to have to continue to work. And on top of that, there is, as you know, how people get hired and how you manage your career has changed 180 degrees in the last 10 years, last 5 years. And it's interesting. It's not just technology. It's a lot of the core values, particularly older boomers were raised with. The most classic one is we were raised to be very private.
Right.
You don't share salary information. You don't ask for things. You know, things like ask for a pay raise. You don't
right.
do that.
Right.
Now, by the way, these kids, these millennials, by the way, they're our kids, and they
right.
is the way they is because we raised them that way.
That's right.
We taught them to ask for what they want. And so that's why they were also referred to as echo boomers. And by the way, that's why they piss us off, because they're not us.
Right.
And so everything, as so many of us were caught up in the dot-com bust, the Great Recession, and basically they moved our cheese. And
wow.
it's a real challenge for people. It's not just the technology, but it's all the stuff behind it of, oh, I have to go promote myself. I have to create a personal brand.
Right.
I have to brag about myself. Oh, that's everything I was told not to do. And now I'm supposed to do it in my 50s and 60s. So this is where I got. In fact, I've just finished a book. I'm getting quotes right now. I'll call Personal Branding for Baby Boomers. It'll be a step-by-step approach on how to build a personal brand. Because put it bluntly, most of us don't want to do it.
Right.
And so it's a combination of learning the social media, but also learning all the etiquette and everything else behind it. So that's why
it's true.
It's counterculture, but by the way, our kids created it. We're very private, so what did our kids do? They created Facebook.
That's right. And I love Facebook. I'm all about I try not to call it self-promotion. I actually had a conversation this morning on Facebook about selfies, about the these apps that will modify a picture of you so that you look really different than you are, you know, trying to make you look
yeah.
better than you are. I actually hashtagged it Hollywood or Facebook Hollywood. And it's no different than using Botox or dyeing your hair, or it's trying to put out a better image
yes.
of you than what is there. And I'm one of those people that I really like aging. I really like being at a place where somebody calls me ma'am instead of checks me out when I walk past them in the grocery store. You know, I'm actually enjoying some of the authority that comes with the few gray, I'm one of the lucky ones that doesn't have too many gray hairs, but the few gray stragglers that are there and the crinkles, as Guy Kawasaki calls them, the crinkles in my eyes, I'm enjoying aging. And I'm also enjoying what I have learned and discovered about myself, in particular over the last 10 years. I believe that you learn exponentially as we age, right? And so I'm really enjoying the things that I am learning now as compared to the things that I learned when I was 30. I mean, I was still changing diapers and running here and there and dropping kids off at preschool and elementary school and getting ready for the dreaded junior high and trying to master the first computer that was in my home. You know, I'm really enjoying where I am, where I pick up an iPhone or I take my computer and walk from room to room and work. I think it's a fantastic day and age that we live in, but it's also a day and age of sometimes shameless self-promotion. And sometimes the boomers like you and I am on the tail end of the boomer. And I'm proud to be that because I think that what comes with that is an extreme work ethic and the wisdom of our parents. You know, you don't see, we talk about career pivot, you don't see people today that retire with a gold watch. They don't stay with organizations for 30 plus years like our parents did, right? And it's interesting to now see people complain about not having stability. Well, that's because they pick up and leave before they gain the stability, right? So when we think about ageism, and I spoke to you about this as we were prepping for the show, I have a friend that is the head of HR for a hospital, interestingly enough, in Hollywood. And she was a sought-after client when she was the regional HR vice president for a large healthcare system on the West. And every time we would go to a conference, people would throng around to her trying to get her business. Well, she made the decision to leave that rather large, prestigious organization, and you would have thought she caught the plague. Nobody wanted to help her get a job. Nobody wanted to talk to her anymore. She was in her mid-50s, had decided early on not to dye her hair. She had a shock white hair that was beautiful, but she appeared older than she was, I guess, and she struggled for 2+ years to gain employment. And as I counseled with her and talked with her, it was discovered that it certainly was ageism. And I have a brother that has been exposed to this as well. He went for a couple of years without work, being in his mid-50s, trying to find a new job is very difficult today. And so what is the most important thing that a seasoned professional, or somebody that has years of experience in the workforce, can do to prevent the ageist bias against themselves? Is it that shameless self-promotion, or is it just staying current? What's the best thing that we can do as individuals that are entering our 50s or over the protected age of 45? What can we do to prevent an ageist bias towards us?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of us grew up in the day of, oh, I want a new job. I'm going to go apply. They'll interview so many people, and then I'll go get the job. I'll go in for an interview, right? And the reality is today, the odds of you getting a job through a relationship is about 80-90%. Most companies have figured out that internal employee referrals are your best source.
That's right.
One of the challenges that we as in our generation have is, again, we were raised to be private. So one of the things is start working on your network. And one of the things we always talked about is, oh, well, you know, it's the people I've worked with in the past. In fact, I just did a blog post. I did a blog post on weak ties. It's based off the book Give and Take by Adam Grant, or Giver and Taker by Adam Grant. And it's the reality is people who know you well probably run the same circles you do. The folks you know very casually probably run in circles much wider than you, don't know the same people that you know, and what happens is they're actually more valuable. The problem is going and asking for help We're not raised to do it. I'm sorry, I'm nearly a 60-year-old guy. I don't like asking for directions, much less asking for help.
I hate it.
So things like one of the things that you can best leverage, one of your best networks if you've got kids, is your children's friends' parents.
Right.
One of my best networking connections is my chiropractor. But I need to go ask for that. So the world of search and how I manage my career, it's all through people. Now, some of that is actually getting online, and I look at LinkedIn as a way for me to manage my connections. Find who should I meet next? Who can I leverage? Who can make an introduction for me? It's all about managing relationships. Now, our kids are really comfortable with this. Their relationship world is online. I used the example when my son went off to college, and he went to University of Dayton. When he flew in on spring break or on Christmas, he and his buddies from high school, they all scattered all over the country. When they landed, they knew where everybody was. They stayed connected. Well, by the way, we need to follow their lead and work our networks and work our relationships. Because, by the way, your next job, you're competing against people who are halfway around the world.
That's right.
Right? Worked with one guy who got laid off from IBM, and he worked on large virtual teams. He'd been there 20 years. And he suddenly gets laid off, and everybody he knew worked for IBM. He lived in a man cave for the last 5 years. And he didn't know anybody in Austin, where I live. That's a scary thought.
Yes. Yeah.
And the idea is you have to constantly be working your network. You can't just go, I got my next job, it's going to last me 10 years, and work my network? I don't need to do that.
Well, and when you say work your network, that means to also benefit those that you network with. I think there are a lot of takers in this world, people who assume that if they are vocal online, that people will just give to them and they will take. They don't understand the concept of reciprocation, right, and how to have this reciprocal relationship. Yes. I've had dealings myself with people who I thought were my friends that were takers, right, and I would give, and I never felt like I was receiving on my end, and it's exhausting as a person who enjoys giving, who enjoys doing things for free, giving advice, showing up and helping people move, you know, all the things that we do for friends in real life, we can do those same things online by sharing information, by making introductions. And when it comes time for us to receive that, you kind of find out who your real friends are, right? Those who are willing to give back to you, those who want to take care of you. And I think if you have been consistent with your brand as far as I am going to share information, I am going to help further your education like I do with this show, right? I do this show because I love to learn myself. So there's a selfish aspect of it, but also I talk about things that I know the people in my network want to talk about and want to hear about. And so I seek out individuals like you that can be a part of that education process. And you cannot continue in this world of social technology, social relationships, social networking without giving in some way, because you will be found out, right? We used to talk about how LinkedIn is going to save the world of recruiting because people won't lie on their profiles. Well, they do. They lie on their profiles all the time, just like they used to lie on their resumes. But there is a quicker chance of them getting caught because people will see that profile that they're connected with and say, I don't think I worked with him for those last 2 years, but he says we worked together.
Well, one of the things I talk about is cultivating your network. It's kind of like a garden.
Yeah.
So one of the things I do every week is once or twice a week, I look through my Outlook or my LinkedIn connections, or I just spot a name that pops up, you know, coming through my social media stream, and I send in what I call my checking in email. In other words, I put checking in as the subject and just saying, I haven't heard from you in a while. How you doing? Here's what's going on in my life. And the idea is just simply to say, you know what? I care. What's going on? Here's what me. Oh, by the way, you want me for a cup of coffee? If they happen to be local. And all I'm doing is kind of, turning the soil a little bit. And just know that, yes, I still remember you. It's all about constantly be cultivating these relationships.
Right.
And it takes work. And we're not used to, I have to do that? Oh, really? Yeah.
I have to spend more time,
Yeah, we
don't like taking the time.
Yes. And it's really important in the fact that we need to act like our kids. We need to follow their lead, and that is that's difficult. So some of it is not acting our age. So I'll use the example at my last startup. I had a bunch of kids, and by the way, anybody under 30 is a kid because I'm old enough to be their father. they ran the help desk. They handled all the PCs in the operation. And I walk in there, and the room was just a wreck. There are cables everywhere. So I walk in there. I look at Tony, and I say, Tony, you know what? I'm going to call your mama. If you don't clean this place up, I'm calling your mama. I'm going to get you in trouble. And one of the other guy, Matt, in there looked at me one day and says, you know what? He talks to us like we talk to us. Because I just give them crap. And they knew
right.
But more importantly, when they did good work, I went to their boss and said, you know what? These guys rock. Because I knew that was important to them.
Right.
And so part of it is not acting our age.
I couldn't act my age if I tried. You know, it's other than when something falls on the floor and it's a bad back day, I just call my dog over. Hey, can you come take care of this? I don't really want to bend over right now. That's the place where I feel my age the most is in my back. So anybody over the age of 45 is considered a protected class. Is that correct?
Yeah, technically that's true, but that doesn't mean
so. Are there? I know, because we can have laws on the books, right? But that doesn't make anybody hire anybody over the age of 45. And it's very difficult to prove ageism or ageist bias.
Yes, it's next to impossible.
Right.
And in some ways, having age discrimination laws are actually dangerous. Because if I knew I could be sued, if we had really strong age discrimination laws, and I could be sued for, say, laying off someone over 50 or not hiring someone over 50, I'm just not going to go there. I'm just not going to hire them.
Right, right.
I'm just going to protect myself by not even stepping
into those waters, right?
yes. I won't go there. I just won't do it. And so there's a very good book out by Chris Farrell called Unretirement, and Chris writes for Forbes and a couple other folks. And it's one of the things he talks about in the book is the fact that laws can't protect us. In fact, in many ways, if you put really, really strong laws and enforce them, you have a lot of unintended consequences that we don't want. So, yeah, it's bad that we have, the workplace is changing. And the workplace is changing because of our kids, by the way, there are now more millennials in the workforce than there are baby boomers. And that's going to continue.
Right. It's going to continue in its lopsided growth.
Yes. It's going to continue.
It's not going to go the other way, ever.
So either we have to adapt. We either have to adapt or we need to get out.
Change or die. Right?
Yep. You're not going to change it.
Right. So I have an example, a real quick example of a positive example of growing your network. I have what I like to call a really rich network, and I'm going to go back to your comment about cultivating a really rich network on Facebook. I like to engage on this social platform, and I have many friends in several different industries. I'm part of a group of people who go around the country speaking. I'm part of a group that spend a lot of time traveling. I'm part of a group that spend time working in human resources, those that work in recruiting, those that work in both, many that work in marketing. These are all areas where I have worked in the past, a group of volunteers locally in my own community, right? So that all these different networks. So I had a frustrating conversation earlier this week with an ex-employer, still resolving some past issues. And I just put a very vague Facebook posting out there that went along the lines of, it's heartbreaking when you realize that that really was the worst mistake of your professional career, right? And I was referencing taking that job, right? And I received about 25 private messages. There are probably 60-plus comments on that page, people calling me, asking me if I was okay, what can they do for me? And I was blown away. I didn't say, I need help. I didn't say, I'm hurting. I did say heartbreaking, right? So there was that inference that I was hurting. But I didn't say, I'm in pain or I need help. Please, somebody call me. You know, there was no cry out for help that I think. But my network, because they know how I normally am, because I'm normally upbeat, I'm normally sharing, I'm always the one that's saying, how can I help you? I'm the one that's, giving back. It was a shock to me. And I was overwhelmed by the end of the day. I was just completely overwhelmed by the outpouring of assistance. So there is a great deal to be said about true networking. In my industry, we talk a lot about a true employment brand. There's a lot to be said about true networking. To have a friend, be a friend, right? It's pretty simple. So can you share any stories, Mark, of a positive or negative experience with ageism?
In fact, I'll just use the example yesterday. I have a client in Houston who took a package, and he's with a major corporation, and he got rehired to someplace else, and the job's not a good fit for him. And he's in his 50s, and he's been with his first employer for 20-plus years. And he started looking around, and he contacted someone who he hadn't talked to in 15 years. And he says, here's my situation, da-da-da-da-da-da. And suddenly this person has opened up about 3 doors for him. And it's like, wow, he would do that for me?
Yeah.
And the answer was, most people, if you ask, will help you. One of the ways I teach is asking for advice. How should I approach this? Who should I talk to? What advice do you have for me? And that's, as I said, I've gotten about 4 or 5 clients here hired recently through because they finally reached out and asked.
I call this turning your liabilities into assets. When I was a very new recruiter and I was recruiting for an oncology manager, and I had spent 20 years as a dental assistant and knew nothing about, I because of that background in dentistry, I had the healthcare knowledge I needed, but I didn't know anything about running an oncology unit. So when I would call in and try and recruit somebody, I would say, I don't know anything about this. Can you help me? And everybody wants to help, right?
Right.
As soon as you say, this is my liability, can you help me? They want to help you. And so and I attribute this to Sun Tzu in The Art of War, which one of the things that you do in what he talks about in The Art of War is turning your liabilities into assets. Don't be afraid to show the areas where you are weak, because as soon as you do, there are massive opportunities for growth. As soon as you say, I don't know this, then doors will open and people will either share, help you, give you a leg up, open a door for you, whatever you need to help you conquer that liability or you know, swap it from one column to the other, right?
Yeah.
And I think that...
It's interesting. I've got two clients at a major pharmaceutical company. the pharma industry is going through massive consolidation. All these companies have drug patents expiring, and so they're all gobbling up each other and laying people off. And just the act of them, both of them going out and asking, both of them have been absolutely amazed that people went, oh, yeah, we'll hire you in a second. You know, when do you want to come to work? And they're going, what? and, you know, and it's only because they finally reached out and asked.
Right.
Now, like I said, that's a real challenge, particularly as you get a little more seasoned like me and older than I am. we're really not comfortable with that. Now, the other is picking environments that will welcome your experience.
Right.
I have one client right now I've been working with who's 68, and he's been spit out a couple of times by major corporations, and he interviewed with a regional fast food chain, and he walked in the room, and the whole attitude of the room changed. It was supposed to be an hour interview. It cut to 40 minutes, and boom. Because, and by the way, he doesn't look 68, but he looks 60. Well, that's not what they wanted.
Right.
And
I think I've experienced that as well. Right. You and truth be told, do you want to be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't love you? Right. I always go back
to this.
Do you really want to date somebody who doesn't love you? Do you really want to force them into a relationship with you? Right. There are all kinds of examples where dating and relationships, personal relationships, are a lot like working and working for a particular company. You want it to be a good fit. It's not a good fit if it's not a good fit for them. Right.
Yes.
It's just not. It'll end up not being a good fit for you. So, just keep moving forward. And Mark, I'd like to talk to you about what you do personally. Right. So I know that we've talked about networking. We've talked about asking questions. All of these things that we can do as individuals who are in that protected class, or and you know, leaders, younger leaders of today need to recognize that, you know, there's a lot to be gained by hiring folks that have been in the workforce for quite some time, who have that wisdom gained, who have strong ethics. And when you consider your own future, when you consider your future as a provider of services to your clients, what are some things that you do, perhaps three key things that you do in order to do your job more effectively, more efficiently, to ensure that your clients will refer you to somebody, that they will continue, that they will retain you as a advisor or a consultant? What are some things that you do personally?
One of the key things, I've been told that I'm different. I came out of the technology world. I came out of the learning and development world. And one of the things I know that my generation has is we don't know ourselves very well. Many of us, as I said, one of my mantras was, I was raised to be an employee, to go work for a father-like company. That would take care of me. Well, that didn't work anymore.
Right.
And the point here is many of us morphed our behaviors. We made ourselves look like the people that our employers wanted us to be. Work wasn't supposed to be fun. It was work. So what I do with all my clients, I'm a big time, I use the Berkman assessment, which I absolutely adore. And it will show how many of us have morphed our behaviors. So I'll use the example, I am a closet introvert. I appear very extroverted. In fact, my Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENTJ. In fact, I'm a big-time E. I am actually an introvert, big-time introvert. Now, I'm a great public speaker. I can work the room, a networking event, like a pro. By the way, when I walk out, my knees, I'm exhausted. But I'm good at it. I'm very good at it. But that doesn't mean that's not who I am. And many of us have developed a lot of these habits. We get paid more to be extroverted. We have learned to do things that are counter to who we are. I've got a client who I refer to as my structured anarchist. He's very orderly. Very orderly. He's a former CFO. But the problem is the order has to be his. In other words, he's really good at creating order out of chaos. But no one ever thinks about him wanting to go where there's chaos.
Huh.
So I've been working with him for the last couple of years to go say, I want to go over there. I want to go, Greg, you want to go there? Yeah, I want to go fix that problem. And by the way, when I'm done fixing the problem, I want to go fix the next problem.
Yeah, well, that's what he does. That's what he's good at, right? That's really interesting.
But if you look at him, you'd never know that. And he never knew to go ask for it. So now
it's a good thing he has you, right?
they've created. So one of the first things I do is we pick your personality apart. We'll spend a month. I want you to have an authentic vocabulary that you can describe yourself. We'll come up with a decision-making style that I'm going to have you rewrite to put in your own words. This is how I do things. By the way, does that work for you? One of the things that most of us, as we get a little more seasoned, we can't explain who we are. And because we don't know who we are, we've kind of fit ourselves very often in these little boxes. And I've had any number of clients who've worked for major corporations, and they've made themselves miserable because they were the square peg, and they tried to force them in the round hole.
Right.
By the way, they made a lot of money doing it and made themselves completely miserable. You know, whether it's paranoia, depression, insomnia, and once they realize, you end up with a lot of rules that we grew up with, but belief systems that you say, okay, because many of us are being thrown in the position of making the same decisions we had to make when we were 20. When we were 20, we had no money, we had no stuff, and we were going to have to work for 20 or 40 more years. Now you have people in their 50s. They have no money, they may have stuff, and they're going to have to work for 20 more years.
And some of their stuff is mortgage to the hilt. So,
yes.
You know, I find myself in that position, and I just don't want to. I don't want to have to do that work again. I feel like I've earned the place where I am now. You know, it's a hard thing. It's a really hard thing, and we have to remember to just stay active. And the things that worked 5 years ago maybe aren't going to work now. And you have to discover new things about yourself. We are out of time. I don't know how it happens, Mark. It always goes so quickly. But do you have any last words of wisdom before we hit my favorite part of the show, the quick hit faves?
Well, the point here is the number one thing is know thyself. And by the way, you won't get there by sitting inside of your room and thinking about, oh, geez, what do I want? In other words, rarely will we figure this out on our own, whether you hire someone like myself or you have a spouse or, by the way, even your kids can help you figure this out, what to do next. Largely, you have a certain set of belief systems that don't apply anymore.
Right. So know thyself. Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
Okay, so this is the quick hit section. I'm going to ask you a quick question, and you just rattle off the first thing that comes to your mind. I call this my selfish part of the show because I always learn so many wonderful things during the great books to read and so forth. So what is your favorite food?
My favorite food is, believe it or not, I'm a salad freak. So I'll put down various different kinds of salads.
Oh, good. I like that. That's very healthy. And your favorite book?
Well, my favorite book right now is Giver and Taker by Adam Grant. Really, I just finished it.
You mentioned it earlier. I'm very interested.
Yes, I really like it. It's a great book.
Great. I've already written that one down. And your favorite place on Earth?
My favorite place on Earth would probably be going back to Hawaii.
Which island?
After I had my bicycle accident, my presence to myself for surviving was doing a bike tour circling the Big Island. So we really enjoyed the Big Island.
I love the Big Island. I did quite a bit of scuba diving there several years back. It's gorgeous. And each of the islands is so different.
Yes.
If you have an opportunity to visit more than one, you definitely should. What is your favorite thing?
If you do a tour around the Big Island is you suddenly see all the microclimates doing it on a bike. That's right.
I remember going up, I think it's called Parker Ranch, right? When you go up over the top, the peak is where, and it's really strange to see, but there are cowboys up there, right? And they have these huge cattle ranch up there, and when you drive through it, it feels like for a brief moment as you're driving up, you hit the peak and you start to drive down the other side. It feels like you're in Texas almost because of the way the ranch is set up. So it's really a beautiful place. And your favorite thing to do?
I'm a cyclist. I still ride my bicycle. That's my favorite thing to do.
That's fantastic. Well, keep up with that, Mark. Thank you so much for being my guest today on HR Latte and talking about this really important issue of ageism. And trust me, the older you get, the more important it becomes.
You got it.
Join me next week as I continue my series on diversity in the workplace. I'll be speaking with Master Burnett, we're going to talk a little bit about a different kind of bias in the workplace, and that would be inequality and LGBT issues. So thanks for joining me today. Tune in next week for our next HR Latte.